Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Award-winning customer service with customized insurance plans at affordable rates made specifically to fit your exact needs. For auto, home, or life coverage, reach out to Ben Farrell with Shelter Insurance of Corinth. We are your shield. We are your shelter.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in on this Tuesday night. I know baseball going on right now, literally right now, but it's all cordoned. They're winning by a lot. I'm not going to wait till the end of that one because we got football to talk about anyway. Pete Golding met with the media again today. I've got six cuts for you from Pete Golding. He went another 22 minutes again today. I am here to tell you that look, press conferences and how a coach performs in a press conference does not mean he's going to win games or not win games, but there is a lot of depth and thoughtfulness to the answers that you are getting from the Ole Miss head coach, and I really enjoy listening to him talk, and so I've got some cuts for you. Also, Pete Golding, the play caller, he confirmed what we already knew today, that he will be the play caller on defense. I know that they had the Tony in and out thing and stuff like that, but no, he's going to stay the primary play caller. Is that the right call? We will talk about that. And then, of course, I've got those cuts for you, and then we'll send you on your way on this Tuesday of Masters Week. I'm so glad that you guys are here. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Just search Rebel Report and subscribe. And if you like what you hear, you know, you can leave a rating and a review as well. Also, right here on YouTube, leave a comment, a like, hit the notification bell so you know when we go live right here on YouTube. And I really appreciate you for doing that, listening, watching, whatever, wherever you are. I'm just glad that you are here. And this edition is presented by Logan Smith Shelter Insurance. 601-823-3500. That's the phone number for auto, home, life, or business anywhere in Mississippi. That's where he can take care of you. Not one part of Mississippi, all of this great state. He will take care of you. Again, auto, home, life, or for your business. Give him a call. Get a quote. Even if you already have that insurance, you might even like the insurance that you have at the moment. It's still worth the phone call. You never know. You might just hear really great numbers. You might talk to really great people, and you are probably going to switch to Logan Smith Shelter Insurance. 601-823-3500. Logan Smith Shelter Insurance, bringing you today's podcast. So we already knew this already. Pete Golding going to call plays despite being the head coach. John David Baker, obviously going to be the primary play caller for offense as well, being the offensive coordinator. But there is some worry that you see, maybe not worry, but more discussion in the college football world when the head coach is the primary play caller or takes play calling duties away. You saw it a lot with Gus Malzahn during his time at Auburn, where Gus is going to call plays this year. Gus is giving up play calling, blah, 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 blah. You see that all over. And whether or not it's the right decision, because there's a lot for a head coach to manage and handle, and it might be best for them to not be the play caller so they can manage all of those things. And I understand why people have that thought and that fear. I truly get it. Pete Golding was asked about that today. I won't play this part of it because we're talking about it here. Made reference to the NFL. You know, NFL coaches get head coaching jobs because they can take care of one side of the ball. Kellen Moore became the head coach of the Saints, not because he was a great head coach. He had never been a head coach before. He's the primary play caller for the Saints, and he is also the head coach. It's a very common thing. It is the thing, really, in the NFL, more so than college, of course, but it's not like it's some new concept or some concept that exclusively fails. At the next level, it works really well. And so, is that the right decision here? Should Pete Golding give up play calling duties, give them up to Brian Brown or somebody else, and just manage the game? I'll be honest with you. If the playoff run never happened, if Pete Golding did not prove to you three times over in the biggest games of the season that he can handle it, this would be a more relevant talking point, in my opinion. It would be something worth discussing. But you saw during those games, again, the three biggest games of the season, that Pete Golding handling the play calling duties while also game managing was a non-issue. Both of those things worked out well. And don't forget all the other stuff that he was having to navigate at the same time with staff and all that crap that they had to deal with. He handled it beautifully. So you have a on-field sample size of play calling, game management working very, very well. And so there's no reason to believe that that's something that he won't be able to navigate now with the full offseason of preparation, with his staff being in place, with having the experience under his belt. I mean, he was kind of built for this anyway. When you hear him talk, you hear that there's so much process and thoughtfulness to every decision that he makes as the head coach at Ole Miss, or as a head coach in general. I'm not concerned about that at all. I think it's a talking point that people are going to have this offseason, and I just don't buy it being something that will actually impact the program negatively. And on top of that, Joe Judge exists there. So you have JDB, you have Pete Golding, and you have Joe Judge that can also be a game manager type assistant coach there. Obviously, he's done it as a head coach before with the Giants, but you saw him being very active and involved on the sidelines during the playoff. His existence there helps make that even easier as well. So Pete Golding confirmed it today, going to be the play caller. I don't think there's anything controversial. Dance with the girl who brought you here, and that is being the primary play caller. That's what got Pete Golding this job, and I'm not concerned at all about his ability to balance head coach duties, game management, and also calling the defense. The staff is too deep and too good and too experienced to not think that he does not have all of the infrastructure in place to balance those duties and do it very, very well. You have the sample size to prove it, and there's no reason to think that it won't just go swimmingly for Pete Golding from that perspective. It may or may not work out as a head coach long-term. I don't know. The thing that I would be shocked is the reason why is the play calling duties. So there's that. He did confirm that today. Here's some of the audio. Well, I've got video for you too. Audio/video from his press conference today. It's a lot of really interesting stuff here. The first thing that I've got for you is he was asked about offensive line, specifically tackle. And here's what he had to say about that.
I think it's probably feel pretty settled on the interior offensive line, but those tackle spots, how do you see that playing out?
You know, obviously time will tell. You know, I think just in day four right now, so brought in some experience there. Obviously from an SEC standpoint, having played in some games, still young, still really raw. I think we're a long ways from having, you know, that solidified by any means. Some guys that played the position last year, right, in some spot roles that I think have the athletic ability to do it. But obviously, as we all know in this league, you better be pretty good at tackle. If not, you got to protect them. So I think that's a work in progress, big part of this spring and the summer, and it's going to develop, in my opinion, all the way through fall camp. But I think we do have some flexibility with some guys to be able to move some guys around, right, based on the maturity and the growth of some of these other guys.
That is the least inspiring answer of the group here. Now, there's a lot to be done, and there's a lot of opportunity for them to be there. They bring in Kinsler from Miami. You already have Terese Davis there. There's Kern from LSU. There's potential for that group to be good, but there is very little experience at the tackle spot right now for Ole Miss, and you know, it's still very, very early. I wouldn't raise the alarm bells quite yet because of how early it is. But that, to me, is the position that I am most concerned about, air quotes, concerned about. Everything else feels good. Interior of the offensive line, super experienced. Running back room, talented and deep. Quarterback room, we know there. The more you hear about the wide receivers, the better you feel about them. The front six, I've got a cut for you that should make you feel good here in a second. The linebacker room, they portaled extremely well there. Feel good about that. The secondary, they returned good pieces and portaled good pieces. Like, there's so much to like about this team. Tackle is the biggest question mark, because not only are they replacing two good ones, but they are also replacing them with guys that don't have a whole metric ton of experience on top of that. So make a note of offensive tackle. Kind of underline that and come back and visit it later on if it becomes a position of which they struggle in 26, because there were the signs that, hey, there's a chance that this doesn't go perfectly in that position group. So there you go. Mentioned the front six on defense. He was asked about physically getting bigger on that side of the ball. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we try to get longer on the edges. You know, I think, you know, we missed a lot of sacks last year when you go back to it. And I think finishing at the quarterback at the top of the rush is really important, and length obviously helps that. And then the C area run game was a little bit of an issue at times, right? So we want to get a little bigger on the edges as well, right, to be a little stronger at the point of attack. And then, like I mentioned last week, you know, the depth inside, when it gets late in games and, like, here it goes, they're going to run the ball, and you know they're going to run the ball. Can you stop it, right, and have enough guys in there from a size standpoint and from a strength standpoint, but also from a rotational standpoint, when those drives start getting extended, like I mentioned, you know, in the Miami game, that we can rotate these pieces in and out. So that was a big piece to it. You know, this league to me is up front. Obviously, you got to have some guys that can play man-to-man, right? And if you don't have that, it's going to be hard to win the whole thing, you know. So that was the thing up front, and then be able to go get some size, speed in the back end, and have the ability to play man-to-man and have experience. And I think that was the one difference to me, 24 to 25, was, you know, the ability of the guys in the back end to communicate, right, get us in and out of things. When you're better than everybody else, you can simplify it a lot, right? And like, hey, you got that cat, right? But when you're not, you got to do some things to change the picture up and stuff like that. And I think it was a lack, obviously, of experience last year on top of some, from a size speed standpoint. So going into this one, I was like, all right, if we're not going to have the experience, we're damn sure going to have the size speed and have the ability to play man-to-man. So when in doubt.
Love that last part. When in doubt, just go get bigger, faster players. But it's not that we talked about anything super profound or anything like that. It didn't take a genius to notice it. But two things he said in there were something that we talked about a lot last season, especially in the first half of the season. We kept saying, remember the phrase, they lead the country in almost sacks. So many opportunities at explosive plays defensively that they just could not finish. And then late in the season, especially in the Miami game, they did not have enough playable depth in order to match up with Miami physically. And that was the difference in winning and losing that game and going to play for a national championship. They, as I understand it, have better balanced the resource allocation for offense and defense. Last year, there was an imbalance in terms of what was available from a roster building perspective. Offense had more than defense. Maybe I was told incorrectly, but when you look at that, that does make sense. It was a little bit more balanced this time around, and I think you can see that on paper. Excuse me. I think you can see that on paper. They are physically deeper and bigger up front. And I mean, he's got one goal in mind. You know, he's not talking about, you know, just, you know, winning some games. It's, do you have enough to compete for and get back to the championship and not only get in that spot again, but actually win it? They got to the semifinal. They were a great team, but the difference between a great team and a championship team was physically they didn't have enough playable depth in the front six. And he believes they have it now. It would be a great thing if he is correct. It certainly looks like that on paper. All right, so switching back to the offense, he was asked about John David Baker, and a good quote here. John David Baker and also game managing with Joe Judge. So these are very similar cuts. I'll play them both for you.
Moving from defensive coordinator to head coach, you obviously worked more with the offense throughout the playoffs. But going into your first full season as a head coach, how has your offseason kind of changed with more involvement towards the offensive side of the ball?
You know, I mean, obviously we hired JDB for a reason, and it's to run the offense. You know, I think when you're a coordinator over there, you know, depending upon where you work, you don't love when the head coach walks in and like, hey, man, we're going to do this, this, and this. But I do think it's really important from an evaluation standpoint of our pieces and making sure are we using all of our pieces effectively based on what they can do, not what they can't do. And then I think, you know, the game's changed too. I mean, if you're going to invest in players, you better have a role for them, right? And you better not be taking guys that don't have a skill set, right, that can produce this fall. And so I do think it is my responsibility to make sure within the package that they create, right, here are the tools that we need to make sure we have plans for, right, and that we're using effectively because we recruited them based on the skill set. And so I think that's the big difference, but I'm not going to go in there and be like, hey, I want you to run this play, and that play. All right, I think it's more of here are our pieces, here are tempos throughout games. Obviously that we're going to have to bleed the clock, right, play fast, all those type of things. But more importantly, are we using our pieces correctly and make sure we're using every piece that we have?
Really good stuff there. And I think one of the biggest things about that transition from defensive coordinator to head coach and something that when people talk about that, they get concerned with, well, I hope he doesn't try to change what's working. And that's a big offseason talking point around this program as well is, look, for all of the bad that Lane Kiffin did at the end and the gaslighting the fans and those kind of things, the football stuff, a lot of it worked really well. Now, there are things that can be improved upon and things that can get better. Everybody can get better. But there's a lot that worked. And offensively, that worked. That style of play worked. And to hear your head coach not only hire somebody from that tree to do similar things, but also say, yeah, I mean, we'll discuss tempo and stuff when it comes to the time of game and, you know, slowing it down when you have a lead or whatever. But I hired him to do a job and he's going to be over there and he's going to do that job and I'm not going to meddle. I hired him to do a thing and he's going to go do that thing for me. It's a very positive sign. Coming from your quote-unquote inexperienced head coach, because you look at the guys that have done this and failed in similar positions in the past, they have taken over a program that's not failing and have tried to blow everything up. And you have not seen that from Pete Golding so far. Yes, he's making it his own. They're making minor tweaks here and there, some changes here and there. But when it comes to the stuff that's working, he's not just blowing it up because, well, that's how somebody else did it, and so I'm not going to do it anything like that. You don't hear that from him at all. All right, next clip, similar frame. He's asked about Joe Judge and what his role in preparation and game planning and stuff like that is. This is a really good answer here as well.
Yeah, I guess sort of off that, I was curious, now that you've had a chance to settle your staff, what's the difference between the roles of offensive coordinator and head coach of the offense? Kind of how did JDB and Joe Judge work together?
Yeah, so obviously I think retaining Joe was really important for us for the development of the quarterback, but actually from the management standpoint too. There's so much in college football now with recruiting and retention, right, that actually designing plays, right, and focused on techniques has been lost because you don't have time to be able to do it, right? I mean, you're meeting with guys before practice, you're meeting with guys with after practice, right? And then the season ends, like, you're meeting with your own guys. You can't even go on the road and recruit. So, to me, like, departmentalizing things, right, and delegating more things so guys can focus on what they do and they do really well. So the management of other things, right, I wanted Joe to be able to help do because he's been a head coach. Right. So then the management of the people, right, the recruiting operation on that side of the ball, right, and all those type of things. So that way JDB can focus on the game plan, right, and on good plays and make sure we're using our pieces effectively, right, and then not have to worry about the quarterbacks as well. So I think it's really big when you hire people that are really good at a job, make sure they're doing that job. And I think what naturally happens in this profession as you start moving up, you get away from what you do really well. Right. And you spread yourself so thin and try to manage so many different things that you're not great at, right, that you end up not being good at anything. And so I think that's the biggest thing in making sure we got management up top that can control, obviously, the people of it, right? And then we have retention people, and then we got scheme people, and then we have recruiting people. Does that make sense? At some point, they'll all be involved in it, right? And they get in one room and we talk and do all those things. But as far as what your job description is to make sure that we're making all our time efficiently, I think that's really important.
So as we talked about to start the podcast, the ability to balance being a play caller and a head coach because you have somebody like Joe Judge, you kind of outlined there how important that is. It's, you know, a guy that's been a head coach can help with the structure of these things and take some weight off of Baker's shoulders and let Baker just, you go call offense, you go get the offense ready. I'll handle organization. I'll handle this. And just how detailed and thoughtful the structure of the program is. It sounds like somebody that is actually prepared for this, as opposed to, again, coaches that he's getting compared to that have done it at other schools and failed were not prepared to handle running a program. That just does not come off and sound like somebody that's not quote unquote ready for this. All right, a couple more. He was asked about which coaches that he's coached under have inspired the way he does things in terms of running his own program. Really cool stuff here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. You know, to me, you know, along the ride of this, like, I've always kept two notebooks, right, because of and in spite of, right? And I want to make sure we're doing everything because of, right? You do this, right? And that because you win, right? And I think you do a lot of things in spite, right? Does it make sense? And I think you win in spite of doing that or doing it not, you know what I'm saying? So we're doing all those things that I think, you know, affect winning and losing. And all the things that I feel like had no impact on winning or losing or developing a young man, right, then we're not going to do. But I would say, you know, it's a lot from all of them, to be honest with you. You know, Ryan was the one that brought me up in this, you know, from a scheme standpoint and a technical standpoint, teaching progressions, right, how to run a room and all those type of things. You know, Coach Saban and the management of it and the organization of it and holding people accountable and having plans, creating self-discipline on your football team, you know, and being able to hold guys accountable. I think stability in systems is something that I learned from Coach Saban, right, because there's so much coaching turnover there year in and year out, you know, and everybody would want to come in every year. It's like, all right, how to sustain success, right? You keep on going to the SEC championship game. You see we're competing for national championships, and it's different coordinators, different position coaches, but the systems were in place, you know. So when you have stability in a system, you recruit really good players, you hold them accountable, the winning takes care of itself, you know. So I think, you know, from an organizational standpoint, obviously, you know, being around Coach Saban, that was eye-opening for me at this level, you know, because having been Division II and 1AA with Ron, it's just different, right? Like, you're painting the field, you're recruiting, you're the academic coordinator, you're doing it all, right? So the delegation and the management of things. But I would say it's a little bit from everybody, to be honest with you.
Just an interesting, good answer, just a lot of detail there. And finally, I think this, of all the things that you have heard Pete Golding say so far, I don't think I'm reading into this answer too much. I think I've got a pretty spot on take about this. I wonder if you guys agree. This answer, minute and 30 seconds worth of an answer, should speak to you, the fan, more than anything he said so far. He was asked if they've gotten a playoff bump, an air quotes playoff bump, you know, recruiting and stuff like that, after making that run in the playoffs. And here's what he had to say.
Any sort of bump or, you know, increase in interest just from the CFP run last year and having won two playoff games? Is that something you even bring up with those guys?
I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, a couple of things in recruiting, you know, we talk about tradition, right? We talk about trajectory. We've had that conversation in here before. But, like, I think it's really hard in recruiting when you use the word "we're gonna." Right. I mean, that was the whole thing when I first got here in the transition from Alabama to here. It was like that first spring was really hard, right? Because you're showing them Alabama tape, right? You're talking about, hey, you know, we're going to lead the SEC in defense. Hey, we're going to lead the country in sacks. Hey, we're going to have a first round draft pick, right? Like, you hadn't done yet. Does that make sense? And so I think that's the same thing when you're looking at a recruit and saying, hey, we need you and we need your class to get us where we need to be. That's the playoff. That's different when it's like, man, we've done that. Right, like that's the expectation here. We're going to do it with or without you, right? We want you, and that's why you're here. But don't get it twisted. You're replaceable, and I'm replaceable. So I think, you know, when you start checking the boxes off, and you've done that, right, very recently, right, then I think it does, obviously, is very important from recruiting. But, you know, this is a what have you done for me lately business, you know? And so, you know, every year is independent of its own, but I think it's really, really important for them to see the guys in the building that, all right, they've made a playoff run. They've done that. They led the SEC in this. They've done that. They've had a first-round draft pick, so they can start checking their boxes, and now they can see themselves because you've done it before, and I think that's really important.
So, again, maybe I'm reading too much into that. Just to me, when I look and hear that, it's about time to me. It is about time that somebody around Ole Miss football And frankly, to his credit, Hugh Freeze actually thought of Ole Miss this way. He just, now when he got to Auburn, he said some things about Ole Miss that, frankly, I thought were running counter to the way he thought about Ole Miss when he was there, but oh, whatever. That was probably a confusing way to put that. Long story short, I think Hugh Freeze also believed that you could win at the highest level right where his feet were when he was at Ole Miss. He just, the personal stuff got in the way and would not allow that to continue. It's about time, though, because it's been a few years, that somebody that is the head coach at Ole Miss looks at Ole Miss as a place that is good enough with or without me. That's what I took from that quote, is you can win at Ole Miss. You're proving that you can win at Ole Miss. And Ole Miss is going to win with or without you, and they're going to win with or without me. That, to me, speaks to what your head coach thinks of what you, the program, have become. That it's not just about what he does for it. There's no ego there, right? Do you hear an ego? Maybe there's an ego behind the scenes that doesn't come off there, but there's no ego in that answer, because that answer is Ole Miss is going to win without you, but I would like for you, Ole Miss, to win with you. And Ole Miss can win without me too. And so are you on the boat or not? Because they're winning with or without us. And that, I think, means so much. That means so much. Because now you've got somebody that will not only recognize what the program has become, but will allow that to continue to push it to a higher level than it currently sits, as opposed to somebody looking at the level in which it currently sits and putting their hands up and saying, I've done all that I can, and this place is great because of me, and I have to get out as fast as possible because you can't win here, even though I am presently winning here. Just a total 180 or 90 degree turn. No, 180 degree turn. A turn. A total 180 degree turn from the messaging that you heard from the top of your program in the years leading up to this one. That's just good stuff to me. Maybe you guys agree or disagree. We'll see. Podcast is brought to you in part by Priority One Bank. They make you their priority every day. Great online banking platform, local loan servicing and decision making, 16 locations here in Mississippi. Bank with me at Priority One Bank. Also, Advantage Business Systems for all of your Mississippi office technology needs, absms.com. Blake says first. Yeah. Good job, Blake. Proud of you. How we doing? I'm doing good, Austin. Good to see you. What's going on? I like that little ASMR intro you and Hey Dad had going for the Masters yesterday. Yeah, that was fun. You know, I got to give praise to my co-host on Sports Talk Mississippi, because he is not a golf guy. He will not watch the Masters. He does not care. But he knows that people do, and he does not fight against Masters conversation this week. He kind of leans into it a little bit, and I appreciate him for that. He's trying his hardest. Shout out Tommy Fleetwood's son. Trying my hardest. Hey, Dad's trying me hardest this week, and I appreciate him for it. Is there any update on the NFL restructuring the current TV deal? So what happens downstream to college football TV deals? They get smaller. Brian Rolapp of the PGA Tour has talked about that they want to get their deal in before the NFL does theirs, because the NFL is going to get whatever it asks for, because more people watch the NFL. The ratings are unbelievable. Doesn't matter the quality of game, doesn't matter the day of the week, people are watching the NFL. It's unbelievable what it does from a television perspective. And Rolapp at the PGA Tour is like, I need to get our slice of the pie before the NFL does, because there is only so much money to go around. There's only $30 billion to go around for television rights. You're not getting a whole lot of new money injected into this. At least it doesn't feel like it. Now, maybe Netflix and Prime and stuff like that help increase that pie, but there still is only so much to go around, and the NFL is about to take more, possibly double. So that's what happens downstream to college football, is if the NFL gets double their rights, the next round of negotiations might not be as robust for college football. This positive stuff with Pete goes back to when Nick Saban interviewed him for the Alabama job. We all remember Saban saying he was one of the most impressive guys he's ever spoken with. Yep, and then the narrative around him leaving Alabama is just so incredibly incorrect. But, yeah. You can't just apply it directly to Ole Miss, but Brent Venables calling the Oklahoma defense sure is working there, and he was the one who recommended that to Pete. Yeah, I mean, they made the playoff. He's still got to get that offense thing figured out, but that was the right decision from Brent Venables to do that. Dance with the girl that brought you, all right? Do what you are good at. And Venables is good at defense. And then when he decided to take that back over, look at what Oklahoma became. They originally passed over Brian Brown for DC, so you weren't shocked Pete is still calling the defense. That was always going to be the plan, but the confirmation of that today I think is at least noteworthy. It's expected that the roster will be better. Pete, for example, says it's the deepest roster they've had. Let's just say the defense is between 24 and 25. That's a top 15 to 10 unit. Absolutely it is. Absolutely. I'd love to see where John David Baker and Judge sit on the organization chart to, compared to each other. If I had to guess, I mean, it sounds like they're on the same plane. That Golding top and then like a family tree, Golding top, and he's got three kids. Maybe four. Maybe the GM also fits on that same level, but it sounds like that's what it is. It's that they are on equal plane. They're just being asked to do two different things. Crystal ball, do you think turn the baseball season around like some suggest, or do you foresee the same stuff, errors, strikeouts, et cetera, plaguing them the rest of the way? I don't think that they've turned the season around. Now, Federico had a nice weekend and so on, but I think that this team still is kind of what they've been. A team that's going to pitch the heck out of it. They're going to struggle at the plate, and that's going to cost them games that they should not lose. I've got to see some consistency at the plate, any amount of consistency at the plate before I start telling you that the season has turned around. I'm not going to let one inning where, remember, a lot of walks led to that. Now, Ole Miss capitalized, don't get me wrong, but Florida gave some free bases in order to make that happen. I am not going to let one inning change because, like, what do you want to look at? Do you want to look at one inning or do you want to look at 20 straight without scoring a run? You know, so there's a positive or a negative way that you can look at that series. I think the jury is still very much out on this team. I do, the rotation being solidified is big for this team, though. Frank Wilson will be very helpful as associate head coach during the games as well. Yeah, I mean, you've got Joe Judge there, Frank Wilson been a head coach, Todd Cooley been a head coach. A lot to like. Pete seems to be taking the right steps and not being involved with the offense. Now that's easier said than done. Many coaches have interfered before due to their detriment. Yeah. Not sold on the tackle position either. Fortunately for them, they run an offense capable of scheming around it, and obviously the Trinidad plus Lacey factor. But it can lose you games. Look at 24. Well, being in town on game week would also have helped them win games in 24, but I digress. One thing fans may not be taking into account with possible concerns for the season is that last year was the best offense consistently under Kiffin. They scored on everyone they played. Interestingly enough, though, like not in the South Carolina and Florida games. Now, you can say that's due to the fact that their head coach had one foot out the door. Maybe that's possible because they played great offense in the playoff after he left the door, and they played great offense before. But those two games, oddly enough, against those bad teams, they had bad offensive nights. Defense is what kept them in both of those games. Sure, many saw Kiffin's thoughts on the 9-game schedule, and he's right. I seriously think it's going to be a massive problem for the SEC and Greg Sankey. 100% it is, because what Kiffin said is absolutely right. He is absolutely correct. The committee has shown that they don't, that strength of schedule does not matter. They don't look at that. There's multiple years to show you that they are not taking into account strength of schedule. That record matters more than schedule strength and who you played. It's clear. Look at the last 2 years. Tell me that the committee has taken strength of schedule into account. They haven't. And so the SEC's added 8 losses to its league. To what end? The increase in schedule difficulty the last 2 years has not mattered. So he's exactly right. Love the content Pete provides during the press conferences. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that I think Ole Miss is here to stay, a relevant program within the SEC and national footprint. This is a big year for that, because I do think the roster is one that is capable of maintaining. So Pete's just got to maintain it. Kiffin's staff was arguably his best attribute at Ole Miss. I agree. His ability to build a staff was really good. But you're right. Pete's staff is great. I think that this current staff is better than last year's staff, I think. So can we refer to head coach of offense / defense as basically the manager of that side of the ball? Sounds like that's the way Pete described it. That's exactly what I took from it. Why do you think Pete Golding in particular gets so much hate compared to other Saban assistants? It's been like this ever since he was at Alabama. Because fans did not recalibrate the way they think as the times changed and the sport evolved. Because Kirby Smart's defense gave up 0 points per game in their mind, which is not true, but that's what they thought happened. And as the sport evolved and offense got faster, played more plays, scored more points, Alabama was still fielding championship-level defenses, but they were giving up more points than the Kirby Smart defenses of the past. And so, therefore, Pete sucks, Smart great, and not, well, the sport's changed a lot since then. Alabama's, you know, running more plays offensively and having shorter, faster possessions, and so, therefore, the defense is on the field longer, and that they didn't take any of that into account. That's what that is. They didn't evolve their thinking with the sport changing. Could you see the SEC games being played on Amazon and Netflix in a decade? Oh, yeah, absolutely, I could. We're going to get a deep late night deep dive on the Alcorn game. What is the score now? Let's see. I'll pull it up. It was 8-1 when I started this. So, hold on, I'm getting there. Ten to one, bottom seven. So I guess they're going to end up run ruling them. Yeah. The in-depth analysis of this game. It's just hard. You can't take anything away from a game like this, positive or negative. It's just can't. Different type of question. Someone brought this up who has followed college football realignment and said that if Conference USA loses a school like Liberty, he said, watch Jackson State to be a player. Now, that's interesting. They have a very large fan base. I mean, that's a big stadium that they put a lot of butts in seats there. So, you know, they do have that more so than a lot of Conference USA teams and group of six teams. I do wonder if the institution will be able to handle a move like that. Will they be able to support football in a way that can actually be competitive at that level? As you know, they don't participate in the FCS playoffs, so they don't get measured against the best teams at their level. I would like to see that happen first before they start talking about a jump into the FBS when we don't even know how good they are in the FCS as a program. But they do have, I mean, I'm telling you, man, they put a lot of people in that stadium, more people go to Jackson State games than Southern Miss games. That's a reality that some people in this state probably don't want to swallow, but it's true. Would you be more surprised if Ole Miss went 12-0 or 6-6? 6-6, I'd be more surprised. Fully expecting something along the lines of 2 or 3 SEC teams in while the Big Ten gets at least 4. I 100% agree. That might be the end of Greg's, the beginning of the end of Greg Sankey, especially when the SCORE Act doesn't pass, because it's not going to pass, because you have two members of the Senate saying that they're not going to pass the SCORE Act unless they pool the media rights and get the revenue disparity amongst conferences more equal. It's nonsense, but in an alternate reality, Florida fires Napier in 24 and Lane leaves. Who's the Ole Miss head coach? And is it still John Summerall? It's 100% John Summerall. It's John Summerall. Almost had 6 hits and 18 walks. I mean, gosh, I understand why they play games like this to support the in-state teams. I understand that. They nobody got any better tonight. Just is what it is. But they did win. Big weekend upcoming. I appreciate you guys being here. As always, I'm going to go ahead and hang it up. I'll see you guys on Thursday after the Megalodons have a game, but I should be home in plenty of time to be live with you guys. And I will see you on Thursday night. Y'all have a good one.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.